CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast. Now, here's your host, Katie Comley.
Good evening. Coming up on the program, Raymond Louis' election strategy has come under attack, and the number of homeless in the Fraser Valley is on the rise. We'll have all this, plus arts and your five-day weather forecast coming up in this half hour right here on News 101. But first, with a look at local and provincial news, here is our intrepid reporter, Megan Turcato.
Mayoral candidate Raymond Louis' strategy of campaigning towards Vancouver's Chinese, Taiwanese, and Filipino communities may be self-defeating. Currently, Louis is spending about $30,000 out of his campaign funds to place ads in Chinese, Taiwanese, and Filipino language newspapers with the tagline, quote, "With my hard work and your support, Vancouver can have its first Chinese mayor." UBC political science professor Alan Tupper says that this strategy of focused advertising can sometimes backfire. Tupper says that it can begin to undercut your base of support if you appeal to in a very narrow way, and that this strategy can become self-defeating. In self-defense, Louis says that he isn't ignoring so-called mainstream media. He says his records show that he works for all communities, but that in this instance, he is appealing to a specific ethnic group, Chinese Canadians.
Homelessness in the Upper Fraser Valley is on the rise, according to a recent count. Volunteers canvassed Abbotsford, Mission, Chilliwack, Agassiz, Hope, and Boston Bar, counting the number of homeless people. They found about 465 homeless people in the area, up 13% from the last count in 2004. Some say the new count may underrepresent the true number of homeless in the Fraser Valley, as the count was conducted in cold, wet weather. Numerous empty camps were found which had recently been inhabited, but which were empty at the time of the count.
The operators of InSite, Canada's only supervised safe injection site, are mounting a constitutional challenge in a bid to keep the facility open. The controversial facility is intended to help drug addicts get their fixes in a safe and clean environment. Users bring their own drugs, and nurses are on hand to provide clean syringes and watch for overdoses. Addicts can also receive referrals to drug detox and rehabilitation services at the facility. InSite currently operates under a federal exemption to the Narcotics Control Act. However, Health Minister Tony Clement refuses to make the exemption permanent. Instead, Clement has granted two temporary extensions. The current extension expires at the end of June. The Vancouver Area Network of Drug Users and the Portland Hotel Society, who operate the site, are launching a constitutional challenge in the hope it will prevent the federal government from shutting down the facility. The case asks whether the federal government has the power to impose jail time for the use or operation of a supervised safe injection site. The operators of InSite appeared before the BC Supreme Court in Vancouver this morning.
Gordon Campbell made the rounds to post-secondary institutions around the Lower Mainland and Vancouver Island last week, granting university status to Capilano, Kwantlen, and Malaspina Colleges, as well as the University College of the Fraser Valley. Although the upgrades go against the advice of Attorney General Jeff Plante, who said a college like Capilano should not be upgraded as it is too close to both Simon Fraser University and UBC, Advanced Education Minister Murray Cole says the new university won't take away students from other nearby universities or colleges and would offer non-degree programs. This update in status of the four colleges comes shortly after funding cuts to colleges across the province, which have forced many institutions to lay off staff members and close spaces to new students. NDP MLA for Victoria Hillside, Rob Fleming, voiced his concern over the Liberals' benevolent act of handing out university statuses, saying that Gordon Campbell isn't answering how laying off faculty will help colleges prepare for university status. Just one day after Malaspina College was upgraded to a university, funding cuts resulted in the axing of seven full-time positions. It's time for a quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news coming up after these public service announcements.
The April edition of Discorder magazine is on the streets now. Features include Ryan McMahon, The Great Outdoors, winners of last year's Shindig competition, and the cover story is an interview with Hot Chip. As always, Discorder features the newest recorded and live music reviews, CITR program guide, and the top 50 charts for the month. The April edition of Discorder can be found everywhere that's remotely cool and is brought to you by the staff and volunteers of Discorder and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
to stop me.
Pleat Community Services Society of BC is calling out for volunteers for the KidStart Mentoring Program. The KidStart Mentoring Program matches kids 6 years old and older with an adult mentor. This program is similar to the Big Brothers, except geared towards kids at risk, vulnerable to addiction, crime, abuse, and family crisis. At this moment, there are 243 children and youth waiting for a KidStart volunteer. To volunteer, or for more information regarding the KidStart Mentoring Program or Plea Community Services, please visit our websites, www.plea.ca and www.kidstart.ca.
Oh No, Not Another Singles Club presents a Mother's Day pampering and shopping extravaganza. Come get your hair styled, nails done, and makeup glammed. Enjoy relaxing massages. Learn belly dancing. Get a traditional henna tattoo. All the services and shopping you need in one place for a minimum donation of $5 per service. Enter the 50-50 draw with proceeds benefiting BC Children's Hospital and drop off non-perishable food items for the Salvation Army. Everyone is welcome. You don't have to be a mom to take part in all the fun, food, and activities. It all takes place Sunday, May 4th at the Inn at Westminster Quay, Hayek Room, from 12 to 4 p.m. Additional information and advance tickets can be purchased by contacting vanevents@tobesocial.ca. Come have a fun day for Mother's Day.
Better Environmentally Sound Transportation is proud to offer bike valet parking to events in Metro Vancouver. Inspired by the widely successful valet parking in San Francisco, 2 years ago Best began running bike valet in Vancouver with great results. Concertgoers in Deer Lake Park, fans of the Vancouver Canadiens, and families spending a day at community events have had their bicycles parked conveniently and stored safely while they enjoyed themselves worry-free. This year, Best is expanding Bike Valet to serve more events, park more bikes, and make traveling on two wheels throughout Metro Vancouver even easier. Contact Best at 604-669-2860 or CAM at best.bc.ca for more information about volunteering, sponsorship opportunities, and booking Bike Valet for your event.
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:11. Seattle City Council has been debating the issue of food security, which is a rising issue in much of North America. With more on that, we turn to our friends from FSRN.
Nicaragua's total abortion ban, even in cases of rape, incest, or when the fetus or woman's life is at risk, has had deep ramifications, according to women's groups in the second poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. Since the ban was implemented in 2006, 82 women have died because they didn't receive a life-saving abortion. A more chilling effect, however, may be the fact that some doctors have denied pregnant women medical services in fear that a resulting abortion may lead to their incarceration. Martin Markovitz reports from Managua.
In the poor rural outskirts of Nicaragua's capital city of Managua, Maria Rodriguez mourns the death of her daughter.
She went to the hospital to get a cesarean section, but they never gave it to her.
Doctors told Maria that hospital cutbacks and overflowing rooms were to blame for her daughter's premature death. However, Maria believes otherwise.
Supposedly this happened because of the abortion law, but she was not getting an abortion. She was getting a C-section because there was a chance she and the baby would die.
Maria's daughter was one of many women who have died because they did not receive proper medical attention. However, because the government does not monitor the deaths of women resulting from a lack of obstetric care, it is almost virtually impossible to know the abortion ban's true effects. According to the women's group IPAS and Human Rights Watch, 75% of the victims have been women from poor, rural areas where there is a lack of properly funded schools and reproductive health services. 80% of the victims have been women below the age of 21. Marta Flores is a social worker from the Barrios of Managua.
Women with money suffer the same circumstances. The difference is that they have better conditions. She can pay a doctor and that's it, like they say, money talks. But a poor woman needs the services of the state, and that's where the doors are closed.
The actual effect the law has had in reducing abortions is also unclear, since the government does not monitor those figures. Geraldine, a doctor who asked not to be identified by her full name, says the law has failed to stop the procedure. She says she continues to perform abortions despite the possibility of facing a 5-year prison sentence if caught.
Let's be honest. Abortions continue to be performed, and in the same way, both before and after the law was passed. So what happened? It's turned into a business. As for the poor class, well, we are killing those women, pure and simple.
The abortion ban was put into effect by President Daniel Ortega's Sandinista party after heavy lobbying by Nicaragua's powerful Catholic Church. Ortega, a man with radically leftist credentials and a close friend of Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, spent most of his life as a Marxist atheist. However, after being reelected into office in 2006 for the second time after an 18-year absence, he later proclaimed himself a born-again Christian and worked with the church to pass the ban. The Catholic Church historically has had a profound impact on the estimated 85% of the practicing Catholics there. Father Henry Moreno is one of the church's most vocal advocates of the abortion ban.
In Latin American countries, there's a very profound love for life. We strongly believe God gave us life, and only He has the right to interrupt it. He commissions man to take care of that life, and the church, as the mother, teacher, and guardian of life, will fight to protect it.
Women and human rights groups are currently suing the government over the law, saying it violates a fundamental right to life because it indirectly denies emergency health services to women. If the case is turned down in Nicaragua's Supreme Court, they are prepared to take the case all the way to the United Nations International Court of Justice in The Hague. For FSRN, this is Martin Markovitz in Managua.
And thanks to FSRN for making that piece available for us to rebroadcast. And we just apologize for some technical difficulties. It appears, according to FSRN's website, they have mixed up the links on their audio clips. So now we present you with a story that we were originally going to bring you, the issue of Seattle City Council debating food security.
As food costs rise and global food insecurity deepens, a local government in the U.S. is set to vote on an action plan which would identify programs and opportunities to promote local food system sustainability and security. Seattle's City Council is set to vote on a local food action initiative today. FSRN's Martha Baskin has the story.
Creative solutions to alleviate hunger and food insecurity are on the minds of many, including some in Seattle's City Hall. City Councilmember Richard Conlon has proposed a local food action initiative, which highlights the need to increase access to healthy food by increasing community gardens, promoting farmers markets, and developing programs that contribute to food sustainability. Councilmember Conlon.
We provide the water system. Well, it's time for us to think about food as another one of those basic necessities that we need to look at more holistically.
Rising costs of food, high demand at food banks, a growing interest in locally grown food, and a recognition that the food system is in desperate need of repair spurred the action. The initiative has received overwhelming support from urban farmers, public health advocates, environmental organizations, and food banks. Food Lifeline supplies food to over 300 food banks, meal programs, and shelters. Their mission, says CEO and President Linda Najat, is to end hunger.
The world food crisis that is occurring is happening in so many very present and tangible ways. And our system's problem right now is that we don't have enough food to feed hungry people. Our donation supplies are dangerously low.
Food Lifeline supports the Food Action Initiative's emphasis on increasing local food production and improving adequate supplies during times of disaster. Last December's massive floods strained the region's food supply and transportation system. Last week, the demand for rice caused Costco, a West Coast wholesaler, to limit bulk purchases of white rice. Local produce needs are being answered in part for those with access to community gardens, or pea patches, which are sprouting across the nation from deep roots. In Seattle, the demand can't meet the supply. Pea patches are a way people can afford healthy and culturally appropriate food by growing it. Yen Hua Shatun has farmed her entire life, first in her native Laos. On a cold spring day, she gathers mustard greens and kale at Snoqualmie Pea Patch in Seattle's Beacon Hill neighborhood. The pea patch lies beneath utility poles and a city light right-of-way, but it hasn't affected the garden's fertility. Speaking in Yen, she says the garden is very important for her family's food. If I plant constantly, I can grow food year-round. I love my garden, she adds. We appreciate the city land so we can grow food. Southeast Asian gardeners have taken an urban guerrilla approach to gardening for years. If land is available, they use it. The city recognized the need and by the early 1990s began to formally equalize access by helping immigrant gardeners with land, tools, fertilizer, and water. Mara Farm in Seattle's South Park partners with the city's Pea Patch program. The farm emerges from highways and exhaust fumes as a quiet, unpolluted zone, a place where vegetables grow in glacier-rich soil, where children get to feel earth between their fingers, and where tons of organic produce are shared with the community. Farm coordinator Sue McGann says she harvested 15 boxes of winter produce last week and brought it to the local food bank. She once used food banks to feed her own family and remembers how spare the pickings were for greens and fruit.
Every year, we grow between 12 and 13,000 pounds of food that stay right here in the community, organic, fresh food. We also distribute seeds and plant starts to all the food banks in Seattle in six different languages.
McGann and volunteers also teach gardening.
We put out a little book last year on all the different vegetables, all the information, how to plant them, how to grow in containers, how to grow, you know, if you just had a little patio or a balcony or something, you could still grow some food.
Expanding community gardens is just one proposal of the Local Food Action Initiative. Supporters would like to see local food gardens sprout up wherever a patch of land can be found, on rooftops and dead-end streets, near shelters and transitional housing facilities. Seattle City Council votes on the initiative on Monday. Thanks to Mo Preventure and Steve DeTore for engineering with this story from the studios of Jack Straw Productions. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Martha Baskin reporting.
And thanks to Free Speech Radio News once again for making that piece available to us for rebroadcast. It's time for another break here, but there's still much more to come on News 101. When we come back, we'll tell you what's happening in the local arts scene. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
William Shatner. Imagine a children's hospital network that boldly goes where none have gone before, and that's Shriners Hospitals for Children. Shriners Hospitals combine state-of-the-art research and teaching programs with world-class orthopedic burn, spinal cord injury, and cleft lip and palate medical care. At Shriners, tomorrow's medical care is here today. Call 1-800-361-7256 for more information. Shriners, having fun and helping kids.
Another night's work well done. And so easy without that nuisance Spider-Man.
I didn't know you cared.
You!
Yes, Electro. And I'm going to short-circuit you once and for all.
You would have been better off in the hands of the police. You are no match for my power.
It takes more than power to win. It takes brains and knowing your enemy.
I'll pit my power against your brains any day. What was that?
That, my thieving fiend, is the result of brains.
Use your brain. Turn off all the lights when you leave a room.
If every household in BC turned off one light bulb for 4 hours a day for 1 year, it would save enough electricity to power all the homes in Mission for an entire year. This Power Smart play brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM.
Menstruation, the final frontier. This is the research of SEMCOR, its continuing mission to explore strange yet familiar body parts, to seek out new information unfamiliar to the medical profession, to boldly go where no man has gone before. Tired of frantically raising your shields with those unexpected periods? Fed up of not really understanding what's going on in the nether regions of your space? Come to the Center for Menstrual Cycle and Ovulation Research and learn how to live long and prosper through all phases of your cycle. SEMCOR can give you the tools to chart your way through your cycle so it seems like a safe space rather than the outer reaches of the galaxy. Our prime directive is to educate women about their bodies so they can have peace and a long life. To that end, we're recruiting volunteers for a menstrual cycle and ovulation study involving a personal log and urine samples, all completed in the privacy of your own quarters. Participants must be between the ages of 20 and 40, have menstruated in the last 3 months, and not be taking any hormonal medications such as birth control pills. Resistance is futile. Set your coordinates to www.semcor.ubc.ca or call 604-875-5960. We're the Center for Menstrual Cycle and Ovulation Research.
If you're a film addict, a festival addict, or an art addict, then we've got the place for you to be. It's the Vancouver Student Film Festival.
What makes this festival different from any other is that it's all about students, and of course, their films. You'll get to see the work made by some of the people who'll be ruling the industry in the near future.
The concept behind the festival is to promote the already vibrant community of young Canadian filmmakers in British Columbia by showcasing the films of students and recent graduates from post-secondary film institutions, and thus enhancing the lines of communication that currently exist between the artist, the public, and fellow colleagues on the West Coast.
The third annual Vancouver Student Film Festival will take place on Saturday, May 24th, 2008 at the VIFC Van City Theatre. For more info, please visit the website at www.vsff.com.
Welcome back to News 101 on CITR. I'm Katie Comley, coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. Right now, it's 5:25 and time for the Arts Report by myself and reporter Megan Turcotto.
This week in theater, we have Chekhov at the Highcroft. Dynama Theater presents two one-act plays by Anton Chekhov, The Bear and The Proposal. That's starting April 25th and goes until May 11th at the Highcroft. Five Women Wearing the Same Dress, a play written by Alan Ball from TV's 6 Feet Under and directed by David C. Jones. The play showcases the work of five young women trying to make their way in business. That runs from May 1st to 10th at the Havana Theater on Commercial Drive. I, Claudia, is Lisa Repo Martel, uses masks to bring to life four unique characters in the story of a young girl's coming face-to-face with growing up. That's at Gateway Theater, May 1st to 10th. No Exit, the Virtual Stage and Electric Company Theater presents the live cinematic interpretation of Jean-Paul Sartre's famous work, No Exit. Viewers watch a projection of the actors as they play out their parts on hidden cameras. That runs May 1st to 10th at The Hangar. The Boy Next Door, Shirley Clarke's, directs the story of four mentally handicapped men living together in a New England home. That runs May 1st to 28th at the Langley Playhouse. And finally, Tuesdays with Maury, the Arts Club Theatre Company, presents the story of friendship and love based on author Mitch Abram's best-selling novel. This runs May 1st to 31st at the Granville Island Stage. And ongoing in theatre this week is Master of Fence. Jim Hebb directs the world premiere of North Vancouver playwrights Darren Elliger's fight-filled comedy about a stage combat choreographer. This runs till May 2nd at the Vortex Theatre. All My Sons is Arthur Miller's tale of love, guilt, and the corrupting power of greed, is directed by Alan Thayne. This runs May 3rd at the Surrey Little Theatre. Apparition, a modern ghost story where refugees from Macbeth explore the muddy terrain of nightmares and fear, runs till May 3rd at PAL Theatre. And finally in theatre, The View from Above is Ruby Slipper's presentation of the English language world premiere of James Long's play starring Tom McBeath, Karen Colville, and Kyle Rideout. This runs till April 29th at Performance Works.
Thanks very much, Megan. And we have a few more listings to tell you about. Mis Hermanas is the story of a woman and seven of her sisters tracing a dream of dance from Mexico to Spain to Canada. It runs from April 29th to May 3rd at 8 p.m. at the Roundhouse Community Center. For more information, you can go to www.flamencorosario.org. The Vancouver Opera presents La Boheme, Puccini's revered opera featuring tenor Roger Honeywell, sopranos Frederic Vezina and Monica Huseman, baritones Aaron St. Clair Nicholson and Alexander Dobson, and bass baritone Daniel Okulich. It starts on April 26th, runs April 29th, May 1st, May 3rd, May 6th at the Queen Elizabeth Theatre. Vancouver Theatre Sports League ongoing season presents Raiders of the Lost Improv, which runs from Wednesday to Thursday at 7 p.m. and Friday and Saturday at 8 p.m. To give you something a little different in the arts listings, the Vancouver Art Gallery has many exhibits on right now, including Canadian Women Modernists, The Dialogue of Emily Carr, Fuse, which is a place for music and live performance alongside art, and a special 12-hour event that's on June 27th, Paradise and Cuba, featuring video works by Kudlug Ataman, runs till May 19th, and Truth, Beauty, Pictorialism, and the Photograph as Art is a collection of photographs from the Museum of Modern Art, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and the George Eastman House of International Museum of Photography and Film in New York. And in the Museum of Anthropology at our very own UBC, a special exhibit is Treasures of the Shimishin from the Dundas Collection. It's an exhibition of 48 artifacts collected by Reverend Robert J. Dundas at Metlakalka, BC in 1863. And that exhibit runs until June 1st. And those are our arts listings. So before we go tonight, we're going to bring you your week weather forecast with our very own meteorologist, Selena Ferris. Selena?
We have a variable week ahead of us. A front passing overnight will cause some scattered showers tonight and tomorrow morning. Tomorrow remain cloudy with a high of 11 and a low down to 7. Wednesday will continue to see clouds with a 30% chance of showers. Conditions will clear up Thursday with a mix of sun and cloud, and Friday the rain will return. That's your 5-day weather brought to you by the Storm Club at UBC. For more information, you can email us at stormubc@gmail.com.
Thanks, Selena, and that's our program for April 26th, 2008. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts, and if you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email us at news@citr.ca. Carrie Baptist produced this radio program. For more news, join us Friday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. For the entire news team here at CITR, this is Katie Comley thanking you for listening. Stay tuned for Wings coming up next on 101.9 FM CITR.